This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell is asking of Jerry Adams questions about Ireland in the context of Great Britain, about both in the context of the world. And class seems to be something we need to talk about on all levels, and at least in America, it's almost as if it's a dirty word.
Well, I think in many ways the issue of class is one of the central issues. Ireland, in a funny sort of a way, because it's so small and because people can know each other, would probably not be so class conscious. Although that may be changing now with materialism and with increasing prosperity. But the reality is that I know, and I take some, I suppose, I can't think of the word that I would use. But anyway, I enjoy the fact that a Sinn Féin councillor in an area is a woman who has no qualifications whatsoever, except that she reared, gave birth to and succoured 10 children, and that others who come from a different social strata are deeply offended that the electorate would choose this working mother over someone who thinks in some way that they have the right to be the public representative. And you know, I think there are elements in the world, if you don't talk about class, that you just miss. I mean, the big section of the population in most countries now, and particularly, I suppose, in very advanced nations like the USA, is what are typified as the underclass, the people who live below the Richter scale, who aren't even, you know, who never vote, who aren't registered, who are out there somewhere eking a living day in and day out, the people who are on the lower end of the social scale, and in many ways who are if not quite criminalised, are certainly treated as social outcasts.
In a way, that sounds like, I don't know this, but just reading, it seems like you're describing at least a major part of the Sinn Féin's constituency.
Well, the big joy about being part of Sinn Féin is that we do have that part of our constituency, and let me tell you, that is the most difficult, for understandable reasons, section of humanity to organise. Because why should they be interested in politics? Politics have let them down. Why should they be interested in shaping out society? Society doesn't help them. So to be involved in trying to organise, structure, build politics is very, very daunting at that level. But the other great joy about being involved in Sinn Féin is Sinn Féin cuts across all of the social stratas. And maybe because of two reasons. One, the fact that we have a vision of the future, which includes a peace process, which affects everybody. And two, and I believe this, I said it earlier on in terms of the universal or international community, but I also believe that the vast majority of Irish people want a situation in Ireland where people are treated fairly. They want to have decent health services. They want the elder to be looked after. They want disabled people to have, as of right, legislative rights. They want equity and equality. And they look to people like us to try and bring that about, or to be part of bringing that about. And I don't think we have all the answers to that. So I think that you have in Sinn Féin a marriage of all the sort of different people, those who support us because it's in their self-interest to do so, because they think that we can negotiate better or bring about a better situation, and those who support us because of the big idea.
Which is?
The big idea of a free Ireland, the big idea of Ireland prosperous and working for the benefit of all its people. The big idea that you could, if you're an American, you could bring your kids back if you came here, you know, three generations ago because your great-grandparents were social outcasts or were outlaws or were politically dissidents, and they were chased out of the place, that you could bring your grandkids back to a free Ireland. That big idea, that's what motivates people here in Atlanta or the Bronx or San Francisco as much as it does in Ballymurphy or the Bogside or Crossmaglen.
Take this opportunity to do the distinguishing between what you so elegantly called physical force Republicans and what I guess I would think of as political activist Republicans.
Well, physical force Republicans, and it only struck me reading someone else's book in the last month or so that this is rather a quaint phrase, and I don't even know where it comes from. But physical force Republicans are those who support armed actions.
And that could be anywhere in the world.
Well, mostly, I would say, in the situation in Ireland. And political activists are activists, as you would have anywhere else in the world. So physical force Republicans are obviously political and so on, but see no alternative but to face up to the British in the way that the British face up to us. That may or may not be legitimate. I happen to think that at times in our history it has been legitimate, but I happen to think also that if there is an alternative, then the alternative has to be the way forward. And I do believe that we have the opportunity to make change through unarmed struggle, through negotiation, through campaigning, through propaganda, through publicity, through argument. And I happen to believe that we're involved in a battle of ideas, and that we can win that battle of ideas if we go at it strategically and energetically enough.
Did the so-called Mitchell principles, adhering to democracy and nonviolence, did that strengthen your hand?
Yes and no. We don't yet have democracy. As Mahatma Gandhi once said when he was asked what did he think of British democracy, he said he thought it would be a good idea. So we don't yet have democracy. We have we have institutions which are suspended, and we have commitments which have been not completed. But I think in terms of stating in a precise way, as Senator Mitchell put them together, a commitment to peaceful and democratic methods, that's bound to be important in terms of signposting the way forward.
You're right.
Bill never does this. This is a compliment to you that he will say your words to you.
You pointed out, deprived of any alternative, armed struggle is the response of the oppressed in any situation to their oppression. I asked you about terrorism, and we sort of glided past that, but it seems that to some minds, would be a prescription for terrorism. There is also still a great deal said about what is called decommissioning, that is, disarming the Republican Army, the Irish Republican Army, and apparently it's still a sticking point in the discussions. And I'm trying to the core issue. Then there's an issue of justice. There's also an issue of legitimacy. And legitimacy, I think, confused with the law, but I think, in some ways those are different categories. And you, in a way, you've answered it. You said, one man's securocrat is another man's terrorist. But there is a state piece of that tends to weight.
As in nation state?
As in the official entity that tends to weight the equation. States get to be securocrats, and those who are not the state get to be terrorists. But I'm saying this because you have spent years, decades, attacked, maligned for being either a terrorist or a close associate of terrorist. And at the same time, this world is getting, and we talk about terrorists all over the place, and we, at least in this country and maybe in the world, have become obsessed with terrorism. And I'm to the point I don't even know what a terrorist is anymore. And I'm really looking for your perspective, your understanding, to help parse out what separates a patriot from a terrorist.
Well, it's impossible to know, and to tell you the truth, I'm very intrigued that this is an issue. I sometimes get impatient with journalists, who who want to interview me for 45 minutes about the IRA at a time when we're 10 years into IRA cessations. And even the fixation on the issue of IRA arms decommissioning, when in fact the IRA is the only armed group which has actually met with the decommissioning body, put arms beyond use, and whose weapons are silenced. And that's I think all information orientated, because the only people they hear about are the IRA. They don't hear about the state forces. They don't hear about the other armed groups. And I think the issue of freedom fighter versus terrorist probably goes back as far as Cain and Abel. When you argue it out, George Washington was described by the British as a terrorist. Arguably, the terrorists are those who fail. The freedom fighters are those who
write history,
become the statespersons. And in our own context, I rarely deal with this, although it obviously is a huge issue here in the States. So what is a terrorist? A terrorist is, by definition, a person who premeditatedly kills civilians for political ends. That could involve governments. It could involve armed groups, anti-establishment groups. It could involve groups of dissidents. It could involve domestic groups or international groups, and it's very difficult to get a proper handle on it all, because of course when a country is under threat, it will always describe its enemies in a way which is dehumanizing, and really it's difficult to know how you find your way out of all of that. It also suggests in some way that what you would call conventional war is different. Now, there is obviously a qualitative difference between people attacking a large group of women and children or a large group of non-combatants and those who would attack an army of the enemy. But have no doubt about it, war is horrible. War is about killing. War is about dismembering. War is about pillage. It's about rape. It's about dehumanizing. It brutalizes the perpetrators. It clearly brutalizes the victims. And there's a beautiful little song written by a man back at home in Ireland, and it's called Christmas Time 1916. And it's about the Great War. And it's about soldiers in the British trenches looking across no man's land at the German trenches as midnight comes on Christmas Eve. And they hear from the German trenches a voice singing in German the hymn Silent Night. And for a period, both sides joined in singing Silent Night. And then a white flag came up and a German soldier come forward and a British soldier come forward and they exchange presents, and they looked at photographs of each other's children and families, and they exchanged beer and so on, and then they went back into their trenches, and then the bombing and the killing started, and the last line of the song was as they continued to shoot at each other, the singer says, I realised that I had killed the man who sang Silent Night. And that's what I think war is about. The ordinary soldier, plain people, ordinary people, are the people who suffer in war. Rarely the generals, rarely the big politicians, rarely the governments, rarely the prime ministers or the presidents.
This is Jerry Adams. He knows whereof he speaks. We'll be back in a moment.